You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
405. We're going to be talking today to a good friend of mine from many years ago, Michael Levin, who is a New York Times best-selling author. We want to welcome Michael to The Pilgrim on the 405. Welcome, Michael.
Will, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So tell us a little bit about this move from Southern California to Boston, and when are you coming home?
We came back to Boston about 3.5 years ago. It had to do with kids and schools, and a few more years, we'll have the boys out of high school, and then we can look at Southern California.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll keep, as they say, we'll keep the light in the window for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So tell us about your what you've been doing with the writing for people before we start into your new venture.
Sure. I run a ghostwriting company, at least I have for the last 24 years. And, Will, I just sold it about a month ago.
Oh, my goodness.
So I am no longer the, or it's, you know, it's in process.
Yeah.
So I'll have more details for you about that later. But for the time being, all I can say is that we are now part of a larger group, which gives us more resources, and it's kind of exciting. So
but
that's
you're
the
still going to be doing that. Still going to be writing books for folks.
That's it. Yeah. The primary purpose of the business is ghostwriting. The short of it is that there are a lot of folks out there who have a message to deliver, and they need to stand out in crowded marketplaces. There are a whole lot of folks doing what they do, and the internet brings on more competition than ever. And the internet tends to commoditize everyone. And when you're a commodity, you're primarily judged on price.
Right.
So the question becomes, how do you get the premium you deserve for all the knowledge and experience that you have, instead of being trapped in that race to the bottom commodity pricing conundrum that so many people find themselves in? When you do a book and you do a good book, then you have a shot at distinguishing yourself, at telling your whole story. The book is something that you can give to the prospect gives to the spouse, so that you get the convinced spouse instead of the skeptical spouse, and magic happens. You can do more speaking, you can get media, you can be on Will Crist's podcast, you can be
there you go,
when you have a book.
So now that you've turned the reins over to somebody else, you got all this time ahead of you. Tell us about what you're doing next.
Well, I'm working on what I call the manifesto, and it's a video podcast. The basic idea behind it is that on a personal level, I've been writing a newsletter to my clients. It's a list of about 13,000, goes out twice or three times a week. I've done that for 6 or 8 years. On top of that, I do a lot of journalism. I'm one of the few people who's written both for Fox News and Huffington Post on a regular basis. That's because I mostly write about culture for HuffPost and politics or values, really, for Fox News. I write for the New York Daily News. I write for Forbes. I've written for the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and CBS News, a lot of places over the years. The short of it is that America is a center-to-center-right kind of country. And in our media, the extremes are covered really, really well. If you are on the left, you've got a ton of media beamed right at you, from CNN to MSNBC to the major networks. On the right-hand side of the spectrum, you've got Fox News, you've got American Spectator, you've got a lot of outlets. But if you're sort of in the center, or center slightly to the right, which I believe is where most of America resides, there's nothing for you. There's no one speaking to you. So I thought, why not do a daily podcast that explores what's happening in the world today and also talks about values, that is without spin and without an agenda other than acknowledging the fact that I think we live in the greatest country in the world, that American exceptionalism is something special, needs to be understood and protected instead of attacked, and that the culture war that's going on in the society is outrageous. And where the left wants to take us is not good for society. Somebody's got to say something, so I figured, why not me?
Well, would you agree where the far right wants to take us is equally not good for society?
I don't want to go to either extreme,
okay.
Yes.
All right. So what I hear is that there's a possibility of having a conversation between the near right and the near left.
Yes, I think so. I think that if you can express ideas without demonizing people, without demonizing the people who disagree with you, you have a shot at conversation. Today, what's happening on both sides of sort of the more extremes of the media is that there's a lot of shouting. There's a lot more of what you could say, a lot more heat than light. Mm-hmm. And you basically have two echo chambers, one on the left, one on the right, where people only buy into or only hear opinions and slants on the news that agree with what they already believe in, as opposed to getting a variety of perspectives or getting a mix. There's almost no such thing as a mix of opinions today. You're either in a left-wing echo chamber or a right-wing echo chamber. But again, who's talking to the center? And I don't think too many people are.
Well, people aren't talking to the center because we have lost the reason for having a conversation.
We appear to have lost the reason for having a conversation. But at the end of the day, I don't think that's true. I think Americans are fair-minded people. I think that they are of a live and let live attitude. I think that on the extreme right, for example, on the far, far right, you might have people complaining about ramping up of gay rights. But the reality is that in most American families, there's a gay member of the family, there's a gay cousin, there's a gay son, there's a gay daughter. And people don't want bad things to happen to those folks, and they want them to have the same access to most things that most of us have. So, you know, it's only when you get to the extremes that things get ugly in society. But the thing is that no one's speaking to that sort of open, tolerant, center-to-center right. That, you know, I've heard people who work in abortion clinics tell me that some of the people who are protesting outside the clinics come in very quietly with their girlfriend or their spouse to get an abortion done, and then the next day they go back and grab their picket sign.
Right.
America is a lot more nuanced than people think, and you don't see nuance when all you hear is the black and white.
Well, all right, what I want to suggest is that that's coming from media. It seems to me that when you're having the kind of conversation you're talking about, you're treating somebody as a human being, and you have a reason for having the conversation. We can listen to any one of the media, far right, far left. We can listen to it. When we turn it off and turn to our friend next to us, we're going to have a whole different kind of conversation. We're going to talk to them as a human being rather than talking in a fashion that is going to give us more power or more control or help us to deal with the fears that we have. And that's what I mean by having a real conversation with a human being. And to me, the path forward for health and hope and happiness has to do with having a forum for people to speak to each other as human beings.
Well, I like the sound of that. And as far as I can tell, that's not happening today.
No.
And I really believe that in media terms, the left is winning. The left has so much going for it. It's got Amazon money behind the Washington Post. It's got the New York Times. It's got the power of the major television networks. It's got the power of the left-facing cable news networks, whether it's MSNBC or CNBC or CNN. There are so many paths for, or National Public Radio for that matter. There are so many paths for a left-wing or liberal or progressive message to get out. Look at the success of Bernie Sanders last year.
And they did such a good job in the last election, right?
Who's that?
The left.
Well, you know, if there had been a real, true level playing field on the Democratic side, you'd be looking at President Sanders, because I think he would have put paid to both Hillary and Donald in the primaries and then in the... But there was not a level playing field, and maybe there will be. I don't want to get off the point here. What I am saying is that if you're on the left, you've got lots and lots of ways to get educated.
Right.
And some of the right-wing media is sort of just a lot of shouting, and on either side it's spin. So what I'm saying is this. Let's say you are a typical American, and what do you want? You want your family to succeed. You want your kids to get educated. You want to have a home. You want to have money in the bank. You want to have retirement taken care of. You want a bright future for yourself and a brighter future for your kids.
Right.
And you don't believe in the crazy stuff that the left is sort of foist upon society, like the young woman who went to her Barnard College graduation a couple of years ago with the university's permission, with a mattress on her back, protesting against sexual assault on campus, when it turned out that the sexual assault that she had complained of was actually a complaint that she withdrew because it wasn't really assault. You know, I mean, there's so much that's nuts. So if you are sort of a typical center to center right person and you just want the facts so that you can understand what's going on, and then when you get into a conversation with somebody whose views are not your own, whether that person is on the left or anywhere even on the extreme right, at least you can come armed with the facts. And that's what I try to do. I try to arm people with the facts so that when they go into these one-on-one discussions or when they go into the voting booth or when they're trying to think things through by themselves or with their loved ones, they have some facts to go on as opposed to the spin that both sides in the media today are notorious for.
So what is your proposal for getting these facts? I mean, two things that you've given to me recently was Axios and Spectator. The Economist.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that they are both of those are much more factual than they are spin.
You've asked two questions. One is, where do I get my information from? And the answer is that I scour the internet for news.
Mm-hmm.
I just go all over. I go to the right-wing sources. I go to the left-wing sources. There's a site on modern feminism called Everyday Feminism that talks about fourth-wave feminism. And I spend a lot of time on that site. I subscribe to their newsletter. They did a webcast of some sort where you had to pay $35 so that you could download the thing, and it's 90 minutes. I bought it, and I watched it. How many people do you think who are contributors to Fox News or even just viewers of Fox News or readers of their website go on everydayfeminism.com and pay to watch a video podcast?
Well, of course not. I mean, it's like feminism, right?
What was that? What was that, your ring?
No. It's like it's like that's the demon.
Yeah, exactly. So my attitude is I want to get all the information I possibly can.
Right.
Axios, I think, is the best news site in America right now, but it's also rather against Trump, and it's rather they keep saying, quote, this is not normal. Well, I hope so. Normal got us into a whole lot of trouble. Normal got us into the second war in Iraq. Normal caused the 2007 economic meltdown. Normal was President Obama saying, if he crosses the red line one more time in Syria, I'm not going to let him use those chemical weapons. And then Obama kind of changed his mind. I mean, normal stinks. So that's my only beef with Axios. But I love Axios. I love The Spectator, as you mentioned, a British magazine, lots of stories online. Love The Economist. Love The Wall Street Journal. I love Google News because you can set your parameters for whatever you want. I love Real Clear Politics because you get the opposing viewpoints on pretty much every topic under the sun. You'll have something from American Greatness, which is very conservative, right next to something from CNN, which is very liberal. So the information's out there. It's just that most people do not want to take the time to sort through all of it, which is what I do, and then they don't want to take the time to dig deeply into positions that they do not hold, and I do. So that's where I get my information from.
All right. So it seems to me that part of what you're asking people to do is to pay attention to things that might challenge their beliefs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to rock anybody's universe. What I am saying is that the media will come out with certain pronouncements, and it'll sound awfully, awfully credible. And the thing is that when you strip away the spin and you're just left with the facts, everything seems very different. I'll give you an example. A few weeks ago, John Bolton became the preeminent foreign policy advisor, aside from the Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor to President Trump. Now, Bolton is anathema to the left. They hate him, mm-hmm. hate him. So the stories that came out about Bolton when this happened had nothing to do with his policies. They had to do with the fact that he was allegedly a mean boss. And they dredged up people who worked for him over the years who said that he was a mean and difficult boss. Well, you know, last time I heard, so was Donald Trump. So were a lot of people. But what they do is they were very subtly undermining him by casting aspersions on his character without addressing his foreign policy positions. And to the left, he is a hardliner. That's the term they like to use for him. To me, he's a realist. The reality is that in the world, there are other nations that do not share our values. Iran is one. North Korea is another. Russia is a third. Why are we going to North Korea? Because you do not, as the expression goes, you do not make peace with your friends. So you have to talk to people. I think that's great. But at the same time, if you come in and demonize Bolton because he's a hard, quote unquote, a hardliner, you're making him sound like some sort of outrageous guy who's out of touch with reality. He's just a clear-eyed realist about the fact that these other nations do not share our values. On the left, there has been a longstanding desire that the whole world is basically just sort of a kumbaya thing, and why can't we all just get along and we'll all hold hands? And that's why someone like Bolton terrifies them or upsets them, because he sees the world as it is and not through the rose-colored glasses through which the left likes to look. Now, at the same time, you've got these stories coming out undermining. Anyway, you get the point. I don't want to belabor this too long, but that's the kind of thing that I get into.
All right, why do you believe that we have spin in the news? I mean, the option is looking for facts, and what obviously happens is we have lots of spin in all sorts of places. Why do you think that there is such a thing as spin?
It's a neat question, Will. It's a business decision, because it's all about aggregating eyeballs, aggregating. It's about getting viewers and readers.
Well, doesn't part of it have to do with power? I mean, if it's just a business thing, if media is simply there to be roses and circus, that's all. We're just having gathering people aggregating eyeballs for the media. That's a total different thing. That would be like, the media just becomes another movie. But now it seems to me that there are people who are paying to have things happen because they're trying to aggregate power or control.
I would agree with that absolutely. Right. I think it's both.
All right.
I think it can be both.
All right. So part of my belief is that as long as we're looking for power rather than facts, we're not going to have a conversation. We're going to have a debate, and it's going to get out of hand because we have all of these tools that we can use.
In our society, the powerful individuals who have bought media companies, whether it's a Ted Turner on the left or a Murdoch on the right, have recognized that they have a way of affecting society, not just through the spin that they put on the stories that they present, but also because they have so many people who watch them that they can go to the president or they can go to Congress and they can say, this is what I want. And if I don't get it, I'm going to turn my viewers against you. Mm-hmm. So it's both. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, having a big media company is a license to print money in our society. I mean, it's the newspaper industry is suffering. But the thing is that I don't see anybody at CNN needing a block party to pay their rent. The companies are still making tons of money, and even if they lose money, they still have, as you put it, they still have the power to influence society, and because they have so many people watching, they have the power to influence powerful people. They have clout. So what's not to like in owning a major media company?
Well, I mean, yes, there's certainly a lot to like if you're owning it. My question is for the society. In order for us to really work together, work toward truth, don't we have to agree that we want to look for truth?
Only a spiritual man like you, Will, would introduce the concept of looking for truth.
Well, you're talking about facts. I mean, facts are truth, right? That's what you're talking about.
Well, what I'm saying is that's not where the media gets its bread butter.
I understand. That's not where the political powers get their bread buttered either. It's got to do with control and power. And that, to me, I mean, I'm looking for the place where we can have the conversation where we're actually looking to solve a problem rather than aggregate more control, more power for me?
Well, look, the reason I do the manifesto every day, and it's a podcast that's available on Pick Mobile, and I can explain what that's about. The reason I do it is because you've got these massive organizations on the left and on the right, and no one is offering you clear, simple facts. Here's what's really going on. No one's offering that because the business model about aggregating money, viewers, and power does not permit it. So the media is not engaged in a search for truth.
Let's take a break right now, Michael, and we'll be right back. And I want to hear about your manifesto, your daily podcast, and how we can access it on Pick Mobile. You ready? We'll be right back.
Hi, it's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Traditional sales training teaches techniques on how to eliminate stalls and objections. Some are fancy sales moves, while others are programmed responses. Sales is a conversation, and I don't know how you can memorize every possible response for every sales situation. Also, the prospect has usually heard these responses before and has been turned off by some fancy sales move. When you really think about it, the only person qualified to address the stall or objection is the prospect. Ask the right questions and you will eliminate stalls and objections. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
All right, welcome back to the Pilgrim on the 405, where we're having a lot of fun with Michael Levin, who has put together a daily podcast called The Manifesto. So, Michael, tell us a little bit more about your podcast and how we can access it.
The Manifesto is a daily look at what's going on in the news, behind the headlines. And you might say, Michael, why didn't you put it on YouTube like everybody else, or on some of the other traditional, by now, ways of putting out a podcast? It's because I have really intriguing friends down in Florida. They're lovely people. They're just your typical Florida grandparents, except for the fact that one of them started and sold a business to Google, and together they have created a new social media format called Pick Mobile, P-I-K Mobile. The idea, they call it Snapchat for adults. The idea is that you can put up stories with photos in ways that you cannot on traditional Snapchat or the other photo-based apps, because there the photos are just sort of random, and here you can do it in a more organized fashion. So the other thing that they did, that the Ralphs did, and this is sort of a long answer to your question, Will, is that about 5 years ago, they applied for a patent on the concept of selling content behind a paywall. Now, today, it's just sort of taken for granted that if you want to know what the Kardashians are doing, you have to pay $1.99 a month, or if you want to subscribe to this guy's video podcast, you pay that much. But back in the day, 2013, it wasn't a thing to access video behind a paywall. And they applied for this patent because they sort of saw it coming. They're smart people. And 5 years later, actually in late 2017 or the beginning of this year, they got the patent. Which means that everyone else from the Kardashians on down is an infringer. What this further means is that at some point, the social media giants out there, whether it's a Facebook or Google or somebody, the big tech companies, Amazon does not have a social media presence, somebody's going to buy them. And they're going to buy them for $500 million or $1 billion because that patent is so valuable. And here you also have a model that is not based on getting the information of the participants. It's not Facebook where everything you know, they sell. You know that social media, when you buy shoes on Amazon or on Facebook, or if you're looking at shoe ads, they can the size of your shoe is information that these places sell to the airlines so that when you fly, the airlines can estimate how much you weigh. There is no privacy. So here comes Pick Mobile with an attitude that says, look, we don't want your information. We're never going to ask for your information. We don't need to know your information. Our model has nothing to do with your information. It could not be more timely. So someone is going to buy Pick Mobile because when you have this app, you have a social media app that does not violate people's privacy. And that's really where the world is headed. The other half of Pick Mobile, in addition to the ability to put up your pictures, your photos, is you can buy information behind a paywall, which is what their patent's all about. And so they are not infringers because they own the patent. And this means that if you go to Pick Mobile, you can subscribe $1.99 a month to my podcast, to the Manifesto, and you'll get me every day in your inbox, whether you want it or not. My wife doesn't want that much in me. You live with it. But the serious point is that I'm there. The NFL Players Association is there, and more people are turning to Pick Mobile as a really phenomenal way, not just to display their content, but also to monetize it. The terms Pick Mobile offer, and if I sound like I'm an enthusiast, I am. The terms that Pick Mobile offers are so much better than YouTube. YouTube used to be fairly democratic. My boys, when they were 10 years old, put up videos about Rainbow Loom. They got 450,000 viewers. They made $450. This is about 5 or 6 years ago. And, I'd say to them, I'll give you some money if you do some chores. They're like, we have our own money. We don't need
money. Empty the trash.
Yeah, exactly. Forget about it. Empty your own trash. I'll hire somebody to take out. But today on YouTube, it's very hard to monetize your content unless you're already at the very top of the tree. And that's unfortunate for people who want to start off and put up stuff and monetize it. You'll be making pennies if you're making anything. At Pick Mobile, you can do much better. The terms are much, much better.
Good.
So that's the long and short of it. Why I'm there.
Now, full disclosure, Michael, not only are you an enthusiast, are you an investor in Pick Mobile?
I am not.
Oh, my goodness. Too bad.
They didn't need any outside money. They did it themselves from their own kitchen table in Naples, Florida.
All right. So, can I ask you a tough question here?
I wish you would.
How many subscribers? How many people are getting your podcast into their inbox every day right now?
We've only just begun.
Oh, we've only just begun. All right, good. So what? How can we help you? What would be helpful to you?
That's a great question. The short answer is that I'd like to invite your listeners and viewers to go to Pick Mobile or to the App Store, download the Pick Mobile app, and check it out and use it for themselves. And then also there's sort of a try before you buy option so that you can see a whole bunch of the videos and get a sense for what you'll get. And that way you'll be able to see exactly what you're being offered and what the videos look like, what it looks like I'm doing on the videos. And that would be absolutely the most helpful thing is I would just simply invite your folks to try it out and see if it doesn't make life a lot simpler and clearer. And again, the other thing is that our kids are getting a really bum deal in school because from elementary school to high school textbooks to what goes on university campuses, the concept of American exceptionalism is being trashed. The teachers' unions are a big part of the left, and it's all about trashing the idea that America is something special. Well, of course it is. There's no other country that's ever been so accepting of people from other countries, people coming here with nothing. They talk about the American dream. As Reagan described it, it means going from being broke to being a millionaire. I've never heard anybody talk about the French dream. Maybe it's a threesome. Or the English dream. What exactly, which would be a decent meal. The Russian dream? The Russian dream is to get the hell out of Russia. So, when you look at all this, you say, America really is something special, and we have to acknowledge it, we have to honor it, we have to protect it, we have to share that with our children. So my video podcast is efficient because the videos are 2 to 4 minutes. Just hit it and quit it. Get in, get out, get the information, and now you've got perspective on another aspect, whether it is what's going on in Washington, what's going on in the world, what's going on in our culture, what's going on in the culture wars, and what a person who is basically center to center right needs to know in order to teach his or her kids and to be able to refute the nonsense that is emanating from the extremes on either side.
Right. So for two and a half minutes, you can give them this every day.
Every day.
All right. Yep. All right. All right. So how can we help you?
That's just it. That's the way. Just tell the folks to visit the App Store, download the PIC mobile app, and try out the manifesto and see if it doesn't make you smarter, better looking, and sexier.
Yes.
In 30 days or your money back.
Now, is there a place for a conversation to build a community here around this?
I don't know if there's a comment section yet. I think that, again, the whole thing is still kind of a work in progress. I've done about 100 and we've got about 115 videos in the library that I've done since January. And I've got another since we only launched it around February. Mm-hmm. And then I'm doing about 15 more today, 15 or 20 more today, just getting caught up.
You mean you do 15 in one day?
Yeah, I just batch them all and knock them all out. So yes.
So you really, it's not reacting to what happened yesterday. These are
sometimes it is. Oh. Sometimes I get a special one in there, and we get that up right away on the site. But by and large, I think it's better to be able to just take a step back. Uh-huh. Because everybody's shouting the same thing. Well, what if we took a step back and asked, hey, James Comey just had that book tour. What did his book really mean? I did something with James Comey's book that not one other commentator in the media did with it. You know what that is?
What's that? You read it.
I read it.
You read the book. probably made annotations about how you could write it better.
No, I couldn't. It was a really well-written book. I couldn't have done it any better. But the thing is that the book is incredibly alarming in terms of who he is and the power that he had, and I'm just so glad that he's out. But the question is why? What did the book reveal about that? Well, all of the commentators, they just heard, James Comey has a book. We better say something about it. So they make up a position. They don't know anything. But the thing is that you have to read the book to have, you know, there's a new book by Amy Chozick, the New York Times reporter who covered Hillary Clinton. Uh-huh. It's a fascinating book. It's hysterical. It's wonderful. And that book is getting some coverage in the media. But the thing is that there's a feminist hero in the book who is a man no one's ever heard of. Now, who is that man and how does he become the feminist hero of a book about Hillary Clinton? You got to watch the manifesto to find out.
All right.
Nobody else is going to tell you that.
Because nobody else is going to read the book.
Nobody in the media will. People
well,
are.
That's what I mean.
Especially with your friends that are reading it. You should read it, Will. It's fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
So what's the name? What's the name of the book?
It's called Chasing Hillary.
Chasing Hillary. All right.
It's just terrific. But the thing is that I'm giving you a viewpoint that you're not going to find elsewhere. And it's not because I'm smarter than anybody else. It's because I'm not beholden to anybody. I don't have to maintain my liberal credibility or my conservative credibility. I can just say what I say. And sometimes it's positive toward the Trump administration, not always. So you know, I have free rein. I'm not, you know, Bob Schieffer wrote a book for his fans when he was on CBS News, obviously, forever. And I actually did some work for Bob Schieffer in the 1980 presidential election when I was a researcher at CBS News. And the subtitle of the book was something like, What I Couldn't Tell You When I Was on the Air at CBS News. And I thought, this man has totally shot whatever credibility he has. Because if he's up there for years as a presenter of news, or as you say, a seeker of truth, and then it turns out that he wasn't allowed to speak his mind and say what was real and true, then he was a fraud all those years. And now he's cashing in on the fraud by writing a book about being a fraud. I mean, this is where the media is.
Well, Michael, I want to suggest that's where ego is. That's where ego is, looking for power and control. And what you're looking for, I believe, is you're looking for authenticity. You're looking for the real people to have a real conversation, and in it you can challenge each other about truth rather than challenge each other about political forays or mistakes or innuendos. And frankly, I mean, the people who have the most power right now are not the politicians; it's their PR people, because they're the ones who control what happens in the election. And when that gets engaged, you're not talking about policy or truth. You're talking about what we need to say to get elected, to get our way.
Well, it's a very interesting point that you brought up. And one of the criticisms, one of the many criticisms of Donald Trump during the 2016 campaign was that he was getting literally billions of dollars worth of free media from the news media. And the question is why? And the answer is that he was the only candidate who would call in and have extended, unfiltered conversations with hosts, people who agreed with him, people who didn't. He would be on for 10, 15, 20 minutes, and it adds up. And Trump understood the value of this.
Sure.
Now, conversely, the advisors and marketing professionals who were running the campaigns of his opponents, first in the Republican primaries and then on the Democratic side, refused to let their candidates have free, unfettered access to the media. Why? Because they were afraid they'd say something stupid.
Absolutely. That's right, because they're not allowing to be human beings.
And for better or worse, the people who were the human beings, Trump or clearly human, Trump and Bernie,
yep,
did the best. And Hillary won because the game was rigged in her favor. She had all the superdelegates going in. If you read Donna Brazile's book, again, that's a book that I read and that the other... You're like, Michael, where do you get information
from? You just read the book.
Read the freaking books, hello! That's what they're for!
That's
read
right.
them!
That's so, right.
You read her book, then you realize that the Democratic National Committee turned into this giant octopus, you know, sucking up all the money out of all the state campaigns and delivering it to Hillary Clinton to defeat Bernie. Bernie never had a shot. And then in Iowa, it was so close that six counties were determined by coin flips. And four of the coin flips went to Hillary. And if it had been heads and not tails in one of them, it would have been a split. You know, and then the media loves horse races. Hillary wins. Hillary wins Iowa. She won. How can you call it a win when you win by two coin tosses? It's absurd. But that's where the media goes. And so if there had been... The media was totally in the tank for Hillary because she was one of them. She's an old friend, a familiar face.
Well, wow. That's how you do it. That's how you build it.
Well, that's how you build it up to a point. But then Election Day comes and the reckoning comes, and it turns out that people didn't want that after all. All I'm saying is that the people who were the most real, which were Bernie and Donald, really far outstripped any expectations. There's no way that a rational person would have said Trump's going to beat 16 of the top Republican and a lot of them are really good. You know, Kasich would be a great president. Mm-hmm. Rubio would be pretty good. Cruz in his weird way would be okay. You know, and then there's so many good candidates on the Republican side. Jeb Bush, a little low on energy, true. So where did Trump come? I mean, I did a newsletter in November.
I saw that, Michael. I saw that. And I'm blaming you for it.
It was called Why Trump Can't Lose.
So I saw
it coming, but I didn't. Nobody really saw it.
What do you mean nobody saw it? I saw it. I read it, and I'm holding you accountable for this election.
Well, I you know something? The way the country has gone since the way things have gone since he was elected, you've got the economy is better than ever. You've got unemployment lower than ever. You've got Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. You've got us going into Syria and meaning serious business and wiping out ISIS and standing up to Assad. You've got the embassy moved to Jerusalem. You've got no daylight between Israel and the United States.
Uh-huh.
I could go on and on and
okay.
on. You've got the elimination of a lack of due process when people are accused of sexual assault on campus. You've got the reduction of the hot air, if you will, around climate change, pulling us out of the Paris Accords, pulling us out of the Iran deal. I'm delighted. I couldn't be happier.
Good.
I wish you could stop the tweeting and the nonsense. But aside from that, loving it.
Good.
Loving it.
All right. Well, I hope that the next time that we talk that you're going to feel the same way, and then 10 years from now, you're going to feel the same way and not say, oops, maybe I made a mistake. But we'll see.
Well, I'll tell you what. My hope is that after a couple more years of this, he's going to say enough already, and then Nikki Haley will be our next president.
Well,
that's and then you'll see how unsexist America really is.
If we can avoid the interim in between the Donald and Mr. Pence.
I honestly don't. I don't know if Pence is electable.
Electable. I mean, if for some reason he were to be had to step up because somebody else stepped out, that would be a disaster.
Will, are you suggesting that Trump is going to be impeached?
I'm just saying if that were true. I mean, that's always the case. Number two is always sitting there, and number two very often is somebody who would be inconsequential, and I don't think he would be inconsequential.
Well, I want to show you something, and I want your viewers to see this. These are library books.
Oh!
A library, by the way, is a place where they will give you books for free.
No!
It's amazing. And then, when you're done reading them, they take them back so that there's no clutter. And I just want to show you some of the books that I took out. Ivanka Trump is one. And let's see, this is about cheese. I just thought that looked interesting because I like cheese. Here's Unbelievable, yet another book about the 2016 campaign that I'm going to read. Uh-huh. That's Katie Tour. And here you go. This is what I was looking for. Alan J. Lichtman, a Harvard professor, The Case for Impeachment.
Oh.
Now, I'm totally against impeachment. Uh-huh. I also believe that the Republicans will hold the House and the Senate, so it's a moot point, and that Mueller has nothing, that there's no collusion. So, but at the same time, I'm the conservative who's reading The Case for Impeachment because I want to understand what the other side has to say so I can talk about it on the manifesto. Yeah. I read the books, America, so that you don't have to.
All right, Michael. Very good. This has been a very enjoyable tour de force about what one guy from Southern California moving to Boston has to say about what's going on in America. So I invite people to go up to Pick Mobile and to take a look at the manifesto, pay your $1.99, and fill up your inbox every day with what Michael has to say about the world. Right?
Well, you're a dear old friend. I don't mean old. I mean a dear friend of long standing. And I love you so much, and thanks for having me
on. You bet. Take care.
You too.
Been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.